Welcome to the third episode of the podcast, Lucy's Backstage Conversations, in which I'm speaking with inspiring musicians who are performing at Tivoli Vredenburg this season. Our conversations will be recorded right here in this building, offering an exclusive peek into the life of great artists. Next to me is sitting Olga Paschenko. She's an extremely versatile musician who plays keyboards ranging from the harpsichord and the organ all the way to the fortepiano and the modern piano, with a huge repertoire varying from Dussek to Ligeti. She has won many prizes at countless prestigious competitions, such as the famous Bach competition in Leipzig and Musica Antica in Bruges, and she regularly plays at important early music as well as contemporary music festivals throughout Europe. She has an incredible knowledge about many different styles of music and is at the same time a very passionate communicator on stage. Olga is a recording artist for Alpha Classics and she has recorded many different beautiful albums that everyone should listen to. This is a fragment from her album with piano concertos by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Olga, I'm very grateful that you took the time to come to the studio today. You played in Utrecht last week together with the Orchestra of the 18th Century, and you performed together the Piano Concerto by Clara Schumann. I have a lot of questions that I would like to ask you, but I would like to start with a very simple opening question. Could you tell us a little bit about this Piano Concerto and your relationship to Clara Schumann?
Yes, thank you very much for this super generous introduction. Much obliged. Indeed, the Clara Schumann Concerto is a very special piece, I would say. Of course, we do not hear so many pieces by women composers. Well, nowadays it's better, of course.
Becoming slowly.
Yes, but before it was not the case. But Clara is a very special case, actually, because she was quite famous as a performer back then when she was performing, actually, and when she was composing too. So this piece she wrote when she was only 14 years old.
What?
Yes,
really?
She was like a real teenager.
Wow.
I guess teenagers back then were a little bit more grown up. Had to be more grown up than nowadays. It's such a sincere piece. It's really, I mean, it blows me away in the sense of this emotional input that she writes in this piece. It's of course very much influenced by what she has played herself, and she played a lot of Chopin, for example, so I clearly see the link from the Chopin, for example, E minor concerto.
Yes,
I hear like the shadows of that, but of course it's absolutely not Chopin, it's absolutely Clara Schumann, so she really manages to say her own word and to be herself in this.
Yeah, that's quite special that she already had this very distinct style at 14, because I could imagine like it's maybe still a youth work or something that you can still feel maybe. But do you feel like when you play later works of her that her style changed later, or is it still very clearly Clara Schumann?
I somehow tend to think that we have a completely different emotion in women's pieces, just because I think women's mm-hmm. emotion are generally a little bit different, just
yeah.
because of, I don't know if you can say a hormonal state.
Biological,
biological,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that men do not have emotions or have a completely different set of emotions, but I think the combination and how the puzzle comes together
yeah.
is a little bit more
There's something feminine in her music in a way.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. And well, she was a youngster, of course, and Robert Schumann helped her with this concerto too, I think, with the orchestration and some things. But one thing one can be absolutely sure about, that she was a tremendous virtuoso, because of how it's written, is somewhere between Chopin and Brahms, I would say.
Whoa.
With a lot of jumps, a lot of thirds, scales, with six, a lot of octaves,
difficult
everything
techniques.
In octaves. Yeah, I mean, and apparently she had hands, I don't know, as big as Rachmaninoff did.
Really? Okay.
Because everything is very, very broadly written, but somehow very touching at the same time.
So she played, she probably premiered the piece as well when she was, she played it herself, right? When she was that age.
Yes, yes, she did. She played a lot of pieces also with orchestra. A lot of Chopin, the first concerto, and the second concerto she played later. But she was also one of the very rare performers who played Opus 106 by Beethoven, the Hammerklavier sonatas,
which most people avoid.
Well, back then they did. Now I think our
it's our like standard of technique has become
in Olympic games a bit like faster.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my piano teacher Jan Wijn once said that about the development of technique as a pianist. At the end of his life, the entrance exams had the level of the final exams when he started teaching. So that says quite something about how much technique has improved. And I think it's a challenge for performers nowadays to stand out, maybe also, because there's just more competition and more people in the business, kind of.
Probably, yeah. It's difficult to judge, of course, because back then there was a lot of competition too. I mean, you had at the same time like Mozart, Clementi, Beethoven, and those people were all around. So who gets the stage? And those names that we completely forgot, like Josef Wölfel, for example, was also a tremendous virtuoso.
Yes.
But Clara did open a new page, I think, because she, as a, I don't know, 13-year-old girl, she could basically play anything that was written back then.
Wow.
And that was also the period of keyboard playing that has reached the virtuosity that was never there before, as much as it was like with Thalberg and Czerny and all of them.
Yes.
It became much more Olympic games.
It became a technique on itself, became much more of a thing. Yeah. So my next question is a little bit maybe an open door. Why do you keep coming back, or why do you find yourself keep coming back to the historical instruments? Because you do both. You don't exclude one or the other. And you make your life probably more difficult by playing on older instruments. So I was wondering, why do you find yourself drawn back to them?
Well, diversity is a big, big word nowadays.
Yes.
So I think diversity gradually came to us, but it was also a big thing back then. So if you see how diverse the keyboards were in whatever 17th, 18th, 19th century, because now we have a more or less same Steinway, Yamaha, Fazioli, let's say, and they are a little bit different, but not as different as the historical keyboards, of course. I don't know. I think it just gives you more colors in life. This is what is very enchanting somehow. I think it's fascinating to be able to have no expectations and to meet new friends in the face of this new instruments, new old or new instruments.
Yeah.
And somehow it always gives you the feeling of discovery. So you never know exactly what waits for you.
Yes, and that's also a risk, of course, because you never know whether the instrument is going to work the same way as it did yesterday. There's more risk factors involved, right, with the older...
Yeah, definitely. But you are sort of prepared that imperfection is something that is also historical, I would say.
Yes, yeah.
But it also gives you freedom of improvising your way through the whole thing, so to be more creative in a way, to get out of situations. Like with every piece, if you play it on a different instrument commands a little bit, it dictates the way you play also, and you have to follow the instrument in a way, but also you discover things that you would have never thought of on yes. another instrument. So yeah. it's really
so
it's
if
very
the instrument
enriching.
Would be able to do anything, it would be a blank canvas and you could just do whatever you wanted. But because the instrument prescribes has some kind of imperfection in itself, it already gives you some framework in a way, like, okay, these are the possibilities, and then you can be more creative with that.
Well, imperfection is maybe not the defining aspect, of course. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more like what is good, what is bad. Like, for example, if you have a very transparent but weak treble, is that an imperfection? It depends how you look at it. If you expect a very strong treble, for example, then you can say, oh yes, I'm missing this. But like, what do you miss if you have a strong treble that doesn't project so well, or doesn't articulate so well, or doesn't give such a incredibly magic atmosphere in a big pianissimo?
Yeah.
So there is a balance of things. So you find yeah. some things in some instruments and other things in other instruments. And then, yeah, it's like watching paintings, let's say. So mm-hmm. like, probably from the point of view of Picasso, Botticelli has some imperfections. and vice versa. It depends yeah. on what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. It depends on your own perspective. Yeah. So you enjoy the fact that your perspective keeps being challenged by these instruments, actually, and by all the different styles of music
Absolutely.
That you play.
But also, I think, well, my thing is to play to at least try as much as I can to play the pieces on the instrument from the period that they were written for.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say also the geographical, sometimes you have French, English, or Viennese.
Yes.
Because I think these instruments, they are so natural for the pieces also that they yeah. explain a lot about it, and you don't need to invent the bicycle once again because it's just
yes.
all there.
You need to don't need to add the interpretation, like, okay, where do I need to pull this from? It's kind of, it feels natural. Yeah, the musical impulses come naturally yeah, on,
exactly.
on the instrument you're
it
playing on.
It just works somehow.
Interesting. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about the beginning of your musical life, because I think it's maybe something that not many people know about. At what age did you start making music for the first time?
Well, I think I saw the piano when I was like 5 years old, probably.
Yeah.
At home, because my older sister, my mom won a lottery ticket and of 100 rubles, and that was exactly the price of the piano back then.
Wow.
So she bought this piano for an upright, the very simple upright for my sister, because she was 5 years older than me, and
yeah.
they thought it was very good to develop the child in a cultural sense.
Yeah.
No, I'm lying. I started to play when I was 5, but the piano was there since I was maybe 3 or so.
Oh, yeah.
But then I immediately wanted to play. I don't know why. But
yeah.
I sort of pushed her out of the chair.
Yeah, yeah. You were like, I need to figure this out for myself.
Yes. And then my dad, he had a very massive collection of LPs, including Leonhard, for example.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, with really, harpsichord recordings. And I was absolutely crazy about playing the harpsichord from when I was already 5. So I wrote a letter to Santa Claus saying, "Dear Santa Claus, can you please bring me a harpsichord?"
Wow.
Which happened much later. I mean, not from Santa
but this
Claus,
is
but
the best story ever. You should put this in your CV, because this is like, not many musicians have a story like this where they were literally 5 and they asked their parents, like, "I want to play specifically harpsichord." I mean, that's quite unique, I think.
I don't know. I think everybody's story is unique
yeah.
in a way. Mine was like this. That's it. And then, yeah, it just gradually started with piano, as just normal people do. And then I was extremely lucky, because in the school where I was studying, there was also a harpsichord class.
Yes.
So I went
so
there
you could combine.
When I was 13, yeah, quite
okay.
early.
Yeah. But you were also studying linguistics at the same time at the university.
That was when I was 16. Yes.
Yeah. And why did you decide to do that aside from your music studies?
Well, to be very honest, my mom, who's a mathematician, mm-hmm. Who used to calculate an engine for a space shuttle in the Soviet times, literally.
Really?
Yes. So she said, "You have to get a normal job."
Yeah.
Like a normal profession. So why?
So do something useful.
Do something useful. Go study a language.
Wow. Okay.
So that I did. Yes.
So it was kind of your duty that enabled you to keep continuing to be busy with music as well.
Well, it was even simpler than that. We made a bet. I said I will never enter, because you had to do entrance exams.
Yes.
And the odds were that if I actually enter, which I said I would not, I would continue standing. So I lost the bet.
By being better than you were trying to be. It's such a strange bet.
Yeah, that was, I don't know, I said, okay, we'll go do these exams, but there is no chance that I can get in. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And did you always know from the beginning that you wanted to spend the rest of your life preferably making music, like that music was your obsession? Or was there ever a time in your life where you thought maybe it would go another direction?
Not really, no. Well, I was completely... Well, I wanted to play the piano when I saw the piano, and I wanted to do early music because I heard this Leonhard LPs. Then when I started with harpsichord, early music world, it blew me away completely, I must say, because that was a completely different atmosphere also from the modern pianist.
Yeah. Could you explain a little bit? Because I think maybe the listener doesn't understand... What is the different mentality of the old music world, or at least what you saw at that time?
Well, I think for me, it's a much stronger community in the sense that we have to keep exploring, and it's also not the mainstream direction that you take. So it's sometimes you, especially from where I come from, you have to fight a lot to be able to say that, you know, harpsichord is a very dignified instrument.
Yes.
Because of course they say, oh, you just cannot play the piano. That's why you're playing harpsichord.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think the early music community is, it's not that the modern is not friendly, but we have to stay together because we have this one goal together, you know, as to bring the beauty of the old instruments to the listeners. And that's somehow, I think, in my humble opinion, that sort of unites us.
Yeah.
And that was also the case when I started. And it was just so fascinating, everything, because you go to, for example, I went to Christopher Stembridge to Italy to have master classes on Fresco Baldi and Italian Renaissance. And that's where I met the organ for the first time, the Italian Baroque organs. And then you see someone so passionate about Vigesima Seconda, you know, like an organ stop, or someone who is like...
Something very specific.
Yeah, Trabaccia Scagno Maione. And it's just like you think...
Oh, lecture about... wow.
Yeah, that someone can be so passionate about these things, and I just find it really beautiful.
Yeah. So a world kind of opened for you when you discovered this old music side. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm thinking about... The fact that the old music community is kind of a minority in the music world, so it makes you have to be in solidarity with each other almost. It's a very beautiful thing. I've never heard anybody say that like that before. Talking about playing on a stage and performing in a concert, is there any hope you have for like the way they go to the concert or the way that people will listen to you?
Yeah, well, I do not think about this so particularly, I would say, but definitely I would love them to be touched by this music.
Yeah.
And there is definitely a story to tell, and all I wish actually before getting on stage is that I can pronounce this music in a way that people get involved with it and that they think about it, maybe they have some thoughts afterwards, or they feel the beauty, or they are moved.
Yeah.
I think this emotional context is very important to me.
Yeah.
Of course, there are, let's say, more contemporary pieces where the emotion is not the biggest concept, but the concept itself is the biggest concept.
Yes.
And
yes,
then, of course,
yes,
you just wish that people, I don't know, just that people see the art and that it makes us all a little bit better.
And then maybe the emotion can be surprised, like in the sense that you feel transformed by what you're seeing.
Well, this is something that I think this conceptual stuff is doing something to your brain also, things that you have never thought about. So definitely, yes, maybe surprise and something thinking out of the box.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about broadening the horizons in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, the enjoyment has a big place, I would say, because it's something that has to be there, but also food for thought.
Yeah.
Like in a, if you watch a good movie, you sort of keep thinking about it weeks after.
And it's not just like that makes you cry, but it also makes you think about what you just saw.
So I think the audience should sort of be able to make a journey through the music. together with you. So that's my goal.
And do you also feel when you're on the stage that the audience helps you with that in a way, that you need the energy from the people to...
Well, I think it's super beautiful to just share what you have and to, to be able to, in this moment, to perform, but also to listen to it simultaneously together with all these people who came to the concert and to sort of live through the moment all together.
Interesting. That's the reason why you also want to get out of your practice room. Then it makes you re-experience the music in a different way when there's people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, with people there in the hall, it's a completely different experience, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we noticed in the during the COVID pandemic when we were playing for empty rooms.
Yes.
And do you have an opinion on this big debate between talent and practice? Do you think one needs a lot of talent to become a really good musician?
The good question is, what is talent?
Or is it just a word people use to explain something they don't really understand? Because that's usually... It's like, oh, it's talent. That's an easy way to explain what's happening when they're really impressed by something they don't understand.
Yeah, good question.
I think definitely talent in itself doesn't really mean that much, because without the rest of the package, and I don't just mean practicing, I also mean having the luck of having good teachers, having an inspiring environment that brings you into contact with things that help your development. All these things are at least as important as having talent, or maybe talent is personality, actually. That's how I like to think about it.
Well, I mean, talent, maybe psychologically, of course, everybody has a talent in just different spheres, let's say, in different branches.
Yeah.
So, of course, there will be more people who are more talented in math, or people who are more talented in music or in painting or whatever you name. So definitely you need to have the inclination.
Yes.
You need to understand what you're doing and also to love it. So there's a lot of motivation, a lot of discipline, of course, because, I mean, look, some people need more hours to practice than other people. It also really depends what exactly you're doing.
Yeah, like during
for example,
that practice.
Look, if I play Xenakis, I really need a lot of hours to practice just to read through the score, because it's just so densely and extremely difficultly written.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you can read through a Bach trio sonata and just keep practicing it for your whole life, because you always find something new in it. So
yeah. So there's different ways of practice. That actually was another question that I had for you. You play so many different styles of music. Do you have any kind of practice process that is kind of the same every time, or how you approach pieces, or does it just wherever you can get an hour, you grab the hour?
No, of course, you know up front. I mean, if you know the style, more or less, you know what to expect, at least.
Yes.
Unless it's a very newly composed piece, then you don't know what to expect.
No,
Look, styles are like a different language again. In that sense, linguistics helped me a lot, I think, because I see music as a language, really. And Mozart's language is completely different from Brahms' language and from whoever else. For me, this rhetorical context is very, very important. You just have to see first what you want from this music, what you think the composer has put into this music, what we will never be able to call most of them, unfortunately, and to ask, what exactly did you mean here? How should I play this? But at least I think with this historically informed practices, you are trying to understand what the composer meant.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have to pull it through yourself, because in the end, you are the artist and you have to interpret it.
Yes.
Because even if we read a book, we interpret it.
Yeah.
In our own way, or we watch a movie or we see a painting. So we cannot completely separate like the artist performer from the artist composer.
Yeah, exactly.
In that sense, well, you just know that the Xenakis you start and you pray that you finish on time.
No, but it's really impressive. If I look at your agenda, the amount of different projects you do at the same time, going from harpsichord one day to I don't know, Stravinsky Ligeti the next day on modern piano, doing a quatre mains program, playing on historical instruments. Do you have a specific tactic for how to change between the different types of keyboards? Because you have to change your entire way of playing when you go from modern piano to an early instrument.
Yeah, that in a way is also a language, but it's a language with tactile language.
Interesting.
That you feel under your fingers. So there's
it's like the feeling of arriving in Italy and not having spoken Italian and then having to get into it again slowly and then.
Yeah, I guess with years of experience, of course, that adaptation time, it almost goes to, I don't know, 15 minutes maybe, or half an hour.
Exactly, yeah. Even within recitals, you sometimes change.
But this is a little button in the brain that you press, and then you know, okay, it's a harpsichord. And then our muscle memory can make magic, really. So if you remember in your muscle memory how the harpsichord works, you immediately do the movements that you need to. But it's all, again, about the non-expecting. For me, a lot is about non-expectation, because you really need to be here now in the moment and to feel and see and hear the feedback from the instrument.
Yes.
And then you just put your fingers and, you know, you feel different things.
So you need to listen to the instrument.
Yeah,
also.
Absolutely. And to feel it physically also. It's the depth of the keys, the width of the keys, everything, you know, the mechanics, how a Viennese mechanic on a forte piano works completely differently than an English one. There is a lot of knowledge behind and a lot of experience. I must say, with forte pianos, you can never say 100%, okay, now I'm done.
Yeah.
Because then you go to a new collection and then you see a new instrument, a new old instrument that you have never seen, and it suddenly is completely different.
And it challenges you in a way that you haven't been challenged before. Yeah. Wow. Speaking about languages, so you're fluent in many different keyboard languages, but also I was really perplexed when we were in Gstaad together to notice that you speak fluent German.
I used to.
And do you, so my question is, do you have any other hidden talents that people don't know about?
Well, I'm very good at telling my son that he should not cry.
Very necessary.
Not that it works always, but at least I try.
So I have another question, which is maybe a bit heavy, but do you have any advice for young artists? Don't.
Well, nowadays
it's not go into music.
It's not very polite to give advices unless asked for, but
yeah, that's the thing.
I would just say explore as much as you can, mm-hmm. and go different directions and see what there is and see what you can say and see what is important for you to say.
Yeah, find your own voice in a way.
Find your own voice, definitely. I mean, look around, build up imagination, and the world is so immense that I think there is place for everybody, first of all.
Yeah.
But it's, I think, very important that one finds him or herself, really, and not tries to copy anybody.
Yeah. In the long term, that doesn't make you happy. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you so much for your time, Olga. It was a pleasure to talk with you. And it was really nice to see you also, because we haven't seen each other for a while.
Indeed. We'll have some projects together soon, so.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to that. And thank you for your time, and thank you for being here, and thank you for your great advice. It was a very special episode with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.